Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at wbez.org/events.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Tropical rainforests are vibrant. Trees, brightly colored birds and frogs, monkeys, and insects all call these forests home. But climate change and deforestation are threatening this incredible biodiversity. Efforts to protect these species need reliable data to track the changes in population over time. And that's hard to come by. That's because the ecosystems are incredibly complex. But AI technology could help. I checked in with Chuck Cannon, senior scientist at the Morton Arboretum, and he's part of a team that is a finalist for a global competition that brings together researchers and scientists developing tools to monitor biodiversity in tropical rainforests. We'll also hear from Karen Weigert, Reset's sustainability contributor and director of Loyola University Chicago's Baumhart Center for Social Enterprise and Responsibility. Karen starts with what piqued her interest about Chuck's work.
We hear a lot about AI, and we hear a lot about how it's in every part of our economy and how it's creating all of these crazy auto-generated images.
And how we might need to be where.
Right, exactly. And then way in another conversation, we hear about the rainforest and about the biodiversity that you mentioned and how important it is for all of us. And then here's Chuck sitting in Chicago, part of teams around the world that are bringing those two together and trying to harness that power of AI to help us understand and then strengthen and support the rainforest.
Yeah, and part of the reason for that is because the UN has warned that rates of extinction, they're accelerating. So remind us about the threat of biodiversity, Karen, that we're seeing across the globe and what the biggest contributors are to this loss.
We are seeing biodiversity threats, as you mentioned, around the globe. I think the numbers are 1 million species are under threat of extinction in the next couple of decades. And that also varies by region. Parts of the world, like the Caribbean, for example, has higher rates than others. Mm-hmm. Water, freshwater, marine life, certainly under threat. And they're under threat for a variety of reasons, some of which we experience all the time. Changes in land use, you know, transitioning land from forest, from wetlands into agriculture for food, as an example.
Does climate change factor in?
Absolutely. In fact, it's probably the accelerant to the threat that is global. It fundamentally changes the weather patterns, which change how species connect to their food.
Yeah.
But it also exacerbates storms that can be highly detrimental to a whole range of species.
Let's bring you in, Chuck.
Sure, great.
So I mentioned that data is important when it comes to efforts to track and monitor species. Why is reliable data so hard to come by?
Well, if you think about it, I mean, I've been studying trees for several decades, and they're very difficult to study. I mean, if you think about an individual tree, you want to get a sample from the top of it for flowers or things, it's very difficult to reach those flowers. And so just physically, it's very difficult to get the samples and observations that you need. And there's a declining number of students kind of getting into this field as well.
I
mean,
so
even
I
though
hear.
With the pressing need for this kind of knowledge, you know, botany programs are kind of dying all over the country. And so there's not going to be sufficient people with the knowledge. And that's one of the reasons we need AI in this situation is because we don't have the labor force. There's not going to be a job loss caused by this AI. This is actually going to really enable a lot of understanding and knowledge of these forests.
Yeah, dig more into that because I was surprised to hear that, you know, there are fewer botanists right now and education about plants overall, that's declining
definitely
too.
Definitely true. And many biology departments around the country. I mean, so if you are a major in biology, you're lucky oftentimes to take a couple of weeks of plant science. You might have one advanced class or something. Mm. And herbaria, I mean, you might have heard in the news about the Duke University Herbarium is being closed and kind of parceled across the country to different institutions. And that's a herbarium is like a plant library. It's where all of the collections go. So where all those records go about the history of what was growing where, when. And those are declining all over the country. So those major resources are being lost. And so we really need to automate this and digitize all of this information as fast as we can.
Yeah. So meantime, you're working with engineers at IIT to develop tools that can be used relatively easily and affordably.
Right.
They're monitoring species. So talk to us about this. You're using drones and AI, and you're tracking the sounds of the different species.
Yes. So I've been working with Matt Spinko. He's a robotics professor at IIT for many years now, and we got involved in this XPRIZE competition. So the XPRIZE Foundation supports these moonshot challenges like in human health and carbon sequestration and so forth, but they have one for the rainforest. And so you're supposed to autonomously go sample as much biodiversity as you can and then 48 hours analyze it. So what we use are drones. And so, you know, the canopies are 30, 40 meters tall, and you have, it's a very complex environment,
yeah,
many different heights of trees and things. And so what we do is place sensor packages on the top of a tree, and these have bioacoustics, cameras, we have insect traps, we have a way to lower a camera down into the canopy.
Wow.
And
so now you can get those plants at the top, right?
Yeah, that's right. And so we use many different models. And so that's where the AI comes in. So it can listen to all of that bioacoustic data and pick out the birds, the frogs, the monkeys that are howling. So you can identify all those things. And without some person having to sit there and listen, it can parse all that data and tell you, give you a list of the species that it finds in that acoustic data. We also have eDNA, so environmental DNA, so every organism is shedding DNA as it moves around and so forth. You can get it in the air, you can get it in the water, and so we're using that technology as well. And so we're trying to build these comprehensive package so you can get a whole view of the biodiversity in that rainforest.
How did your team feel about using the drones in practice?
Well, it's exciting. I mean, it's a challenge because if you fly high above the canopy, it's not a problem. So we're also working with the team at Purdue that do LIDAR and multispectral sensing of the, so they fly high above, but you're flying these drones very close. They're just tens of meters above the canopy. And so it's very hard to send the signal. So the telemetry, so communicating with the drone is actually a big challenge. And so that's one of our things that we're trying to overcome. And so we're putting these things on top of a tree and we're leaving them there and we're coming back and getting them the next day. There were some difficulties doing this in the past, and we're still improving that technology.
Right. Well, so it's clear, right? Who is this for, Chuck? I mean, who can use this information to protect rainforests? Who are you marketing?
Yeah, we hope many different people can use this. I mean, so we're also targeting like indigenous groups because they're the stewards of these forests, and if they could document the changes in the biodiversity in their area, they could then sell biodiversity credits. And so it's a way to allow corporations to then invest. So you need to have verifiable data from the sensor all the way through the information chain to a dashboard. You know, it's some big corporation that's trying to do their accountability in the environment. So if you could verify that information all the way back to the rainforest,
right,
and the indigenous groups that are then using that technology to document that, they could then sell that knowledge and can, and then the corporation can also have the confidence that they can drill down and see, you know, they can hear the clip of the bird singing that is identified on that list, you know. And so we need to have that kind of blockchain of information from the sensor to the dashboard. We can include those externalities. We're trying to do more and more accounting beyond the financial these days, right, in the business model. So if we can incorporate that into the business model directly, this is having this kind of environmental impact, it's supporting this kind of biodiversity, that would be very powerful. So all through that chain, from the indigenous people living next to the forest all the way to the people consuming it, we hope that data could be useful.
Karen, you're listening along to Chuck's description here. I mean, is this the future? And do you anticipate seeing more ways that scientists and environmentalists can use AI to address climate change and other environmental issues?
It's definitely a piece of the future.
Yeah.
AI has so much potential.
Talk about worlds colliding.
Seriously, that's exactly what this is. And this is a moment where it might collide for good. When you think about AI and the potential to gather and then analyze data and the extraordinary amounts of data that we can now start to create to better understand nature around us and the potential of AI to forecast. And so then we can actually look ahead.
Yeah.
So when I started looking around at AI and nature, I found multiple examples already. I found examples in climate tech. And as you think about all the information we have from prior studies, AI can synthesize all of that. It can tell you which ones are most promising. So there are an incredible amount of ways that I anticipate Chuck's going to have a lot of colleagues in the space.
I bet you have questions for Chuck.
I'd love to talk to Chuck more. One of the things I'd love to ask is, how can some of these tools do work for us here in Chicago?
Yeah, I mean, they're the basic tool of iNaturalists are things that can help identify the plants and animals around you. So like Merlin from the Cornell Ornithology Lab. So there are apps on your phone that you can download, point at a plant, and it can give you an approximate name. So, you know, we're still working on the quality of the identification sometimes, but it's a really powerful thing because it can be a real barrier to people trying to understand the world around them is just what kind of tree is this. If they can put a name on it, learn a little bit about it on the internet, I think it's a real gateway to allow people to appreciate it and to kind of dig in a little bit deeper. I had an undergraduate who was kind of, you know, during the pandemic was kind of sequestered away, and he got into iNaturalist and is now a complete botany nerd. He loves plants, and it's a very dynamic, very engaged community. And so it's not only identifying the plants, but there's also a community of people who are very interested in the biodiversity in your neighborhood. And there is biodiversity in your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the thing. Don't just think it's in the rainforest. It's here in Chicago as well. And we should be aware of that as well.
I love that. Well, you mentioned earlier you're part of this team that's a finalist for X Prize. Tell us a bit more about that and what the next steps are.
Yeah, it's a 5-year competition, so we're in the latter stages of that. There were semifinals in Singapore, so we competed against 15 other teams in Singapore last June. And
so for 5 years, you've got to just keep competing?
We've been doing this, yeah, so there were steps, you know. So
okay.
It's been a slow build towards the finals. But the finals are in July in Brazil, so we don't yet know the exact location, so that's part of the challenge as well. They'll tell us when we get there. And so we're supposed to be able to do this in any forest anywhere. So we'll be in Amazonas, the state near the city of Manaus. Mm-hmm. Then afterwards, you know, we will try. That's the thing. We all have jobs as well. So this challenge is kind of like adding more things onto our plates.
Right.
But I think there's a lot of opportunity in this. And so we'll be discussing this with investors. We also are working with another company, Natural State. They're kind of an environmental accounting company. And so they are really in this business of trying to sell this knowledge and data to people who can use it for good. And so for those kinds of markets, carbon markets, biodiversity credit markets, and do serious verifiable environmental accounting, that's kind of the final outcome we hope to have.
Well, we're almost out of time, but while I've got you here, I do have to ask you, Chuck, because there are blooms on the trees, but it's been cold.
Yes.
Should we be concerned?
Yes. I mean, Not yes to be concerned, but yes, it is an issue because as things bloom earlier, we are still at a risk of severe frost. I mean, so there is a chance that things could freeze again and knock everything back.
Yeah, but you're doing some work at the Morton Arboretum to help, you know, protect our tree health.
I mean, we can't really make the trees stop coming out in the springtime. But we are learning more about how to predict when that happens and what are the cues and things.
I see.
And it's kind of a selective process as well. I mean, these kinds of events will tell us which trees are going to perform better in the future climate. And so we're monitoring those kind of the behavior of the fruiting and flowering when they leaf out so that we can better understand how they will respond to these kinds of unusual weather patterns.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting stuff. We'll leave it there. Chuck Cannon is a senior scientist at the Morton Arboretum, and Karen Weigert is Reset's sustainability contributor. Thank you both so much.
Great to see you.
This episode of the Reset podcast was produced by Linnea Dominic, edited by Maha Ahmed, and mixed by Brenda Ruiz. To hear more conversations about interesting people, places, and issues in the Chicago area, make sure to subscribe and head over to wbez.org/reset for a full archive of our interviews. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Have you ever wondered why anyone drinks Malort? Or if there are actually lobsters in the Chicago River? Then listen to the Curious City podcast, where we answer all your questions about Chicago and the region. WBEZ's Curious City is part of the NPR network and available wherever you find your podcasts.